Podcast 1 considered how blood is filtered in the kidney, and it outlined how the requirements to recover water, salts, and nutrients are reflected in the anatomical organisation of the organ. This podcast considers how this recovery actually happens. The first very important point to grasp is that cells have very few active pumps that can directly couple the use of ATP to the moving of a molecule against its chemiosmotic gradient. The two that are available for use on the plasma membrane are the sodium potassium ATPase and the proton ATPase. Both are used in the kidney, the proton ATPase mainly in a specialised place we'll consider later, and the sodium potassium ATPase on the basal sides of all TBL cells. This pump uses the energy of ATP hydrolysis to pump 3 sodium ions out of the cell and 2 potassium ions in. This makes the inside of the cell very potassium-rich and sodium-poor compared to the extracellular fluid. Given the chance, sodium from outside the cell will flood in to redress this imbalance. This again is a consequence of the second law of thermodynamics. The body may not have pumps for other molecules, but it does have more than 300 different transmembrane solute carrier, or SLC, proteins. Many of these are co-transporters, which can move one solute against its own chemiosmotic gradient at the expense of simultaneously moving something else, typically sodium, down its gradient. This means that as long as the sodium-potassium ATPase pump is running and making the cytoplasm of a tubule cell sodium-poor, an SLC molecule can, for the price of pulling in one or more sodium ions, pull in something else as well. To take a concrete example, SLC6A18 is located in the apical domain of proximal tubule cells. It allows the couple transport of sodium, chloride and neutral amino acids into those cells from the urine. Recovered amino acids can then drift back out of the basal side of the cells into the body fluids by passive flow through other channels. Many more examples are given in the lectures and in the handout, but the most important thing to grasp is the basic principle of a specific SLC transport system recovering a molecule from the urinary space by parasitizing the sodium gradient that's in turn built by the basal sodium-potassium ATPase. Let's now go along the nephron, considering what's happening at each site. In this first walkthrough, we'll skate over delicate homeostatic regulation of pH and concentration and just focus on the core mechanisms, leaving the subtleties to pick up again later. The Bowman's capsule, just beyond the filter of the glomerulus, is mainly a holding place for fresh filtrate and, as far as we know, nothing very exciting happens there. The proximal tubule, in contrast, is made of cells with very villus-rich apical membranes, meaning they have a large surface area, and these cells have a great many SLC co-transporter channels. In the proximal tubule, these channels parasitize the basal sodium gradient to pull sodium itself, glucose, amino acids and bicarbonate from the filtrate into the cytoplasm, from which they return to the body fluids. With so much sodium leaving the filtrate would become negative with respect to the body, and this charge difference drives chloride back into the body too, to balance what's happening with sodium. The flight of ions, glucose and amino acids from the filtrate makes it dilute compared to the body, so water also flows out towards the body through rather leaky junctions between the proximal tubule cells. As an aside, it's interesting to note that if there's so much glucose in the filtrate that the recovery systems are overwhelmed, as there would be in diabetes mellitus, not all glucose is removed. This leaves the urine sweet, hence mellitus, and means that there's less water recovery than normal. Remember that the word diabetes refers to excessive urine flow and comes from the Greek word for siphon. When it leaves the proximal tubule, the filtrate has given up about 2/3 of its sodium and the other small molecules mentioned above, and about the same amount of water, so it's still roughly isoosmotic with the tissues. From the proximal tubule, the filtrate next flows into the loop of Henle, which leads down into the kidney's intensely salty medulla. The walls of the descending loop of Henle, through which the filtrate enters the medulla, are permeable to water, but not to salt. Water therefore floods out of the tubule, driven by its second law need to dilute the salty outside. The fluid remaining on the inside of the tubule therefore becomes much more concentrated. On its way back up, the now concentrated filtrate enters the thick ascending limb of the loop of Henle. This thick ascending limb has completely opposite properties to the thin descending limb. It actively recovers salt from the urine, mainly sodium and potassium chlorides, diluting the urine but making the surrounding medulla more salty. Because the urine and the lumen of the tubule is already very salty by the time it even enters the ascending limb, having lost much of its water while in the descending limb, the recovery systems in the ascending thick limb can work very efficiently, and they push a great deal of salt into the surrounding medulla. This compensates for its being diluted by the water that passed into it from the descending limb. So efficient is this transport process that the urine leaving the ascending limb to enter the distal tubule is actually hypoosmolar with respect to normal body tissues. As well as salt, urea is concentrated in the medulla and contributes to its high osmolarity. This comes out of the concentrated urine in the collecting ducts, and the amount that comes out is regulated by vasopressin. To avoid messing up the salty zone of the medulla, blood vessels enter it from the cortex and go back up the same way they came in. As the blood flows down, it loses water and becomes salty, and as it flows up to less concentrated regions, it takes on water again and loses salt again. This process, countercurrent exchange, minimizes how much salt gets moved out by the blood and helps to conserve the unique environment of the medulla. By the time the urine has reached the distal tubule, it has lost about 75% of the water and 90% of the salt that it had when it was the primary filtrate. In the distal tubule, yet more salt is removed, taking the total amount recovered to about 95%. Although this last bit of removal is modest, it's important because it can be regulated by signals from the rest of the body, fine-tuning exactly how much salt is lost. Once in the collecting ducts, the urine passes once again down into the medulla, only this time it will never come back. As it again encounters the very salty zone, the urine gives up water, the efficiency with which this happens being regulated by how much aquaporin the collecting duct cells have in their membranes. In turn, this is controlled by vasopressin. If the body is trying to conserve water, up to a total of 99% can be recovered from the initial filtrate. About 24% of this recovery takes place in the collecting ducts. If, on the other hand, the body has too much water, the collecting ducts allow very little to pass back to the medulla. This, then, is the basic picture of how the kidney works. The next podcast will consider how its function can be controlled to achieve homeostasis. Copyright statement. This audio essay by Professor Jamie Davis is to support the first-year MBCHB course at the University of Edinburgh. It is released under the terms of the GNU Public License. It may be distributed freely, but this copyright statement must remain with it, unaltered.